My name's Lucian Wyszyk. My job is I'm the specification lead for Visual Basic, and I'm on the joint C# and VB design team. We've integrated the two, so we design both languages at the same time. I also implemented the VB and C# async CTP compiler feature, and I'll be talking a bit about that today. More about me. I really love swimming. And I love hiking. And I'm really happy to be here in Switzerland, in Basel in particular. I had the opportunity to spend all day yesterday hiking in the hills. It was a glorious day. It was fantastic. And what I discovered is that you Swiss really like to have piles of firewood for some reason. And I discovered that some of you like them so much that you must make your homes in them. I'm not quite sure what's happening here. Now, I'm not really a speaker. My job is language design and coding back in Redmond. I've never given this particular talk before. I'm still learning how to give talks. I'd really like you to fill out the session evaluation forms. That way, the information will get back to me. For every form that's filled out, what, there are 120 people. I will give $5 to Doctors Without Borders. Microsoft will give the same amount. This is not a bribe for a positive score. The best way I can learn as a speaker is if you make criticisms and if you suggest specific ways in which I can improve. But if you all fill out the form, that will be a good chunk of money to charity. So thank you in advance. This is a simple talk. I'm going to talk about the future of Visual Basic and C#, and I'm going to talk about the distant future of Visual Basic and C#. Let's get started straight away. Really, to talk about the future, we have to talk about the past. Each release since 2000, when .NET was introduced, the languages have had one major theme per release. Managed code, the very first release of .NET, then generics, then language integrated query, and then coevolution, making the two languages pretty much the same. What's coming next is asynchronous programming. I think really, our job as language designers is to try and look at where the industry is going, to forecast the trends that we see out there, to listen to what you guys say that you want, and then partly to ignore that and to figure out what you actually need, and then spin the dice and see if we can guess the best way to serve that need. And actually, we have to recognize that, I mean, even though our job is language designers, so many needs can best be met with libraries or with APIs or with wizards or with designers or toolkits. We have to figure out, are there some small areas where a small extra piece of language design can make the rest of the platform that much easier, can unlock something new and useful? And at the same time, we're very conscious. Every feature that we introduce wastes your time. You have to spend a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks just learning it. Even if you evaluate it and you decide that it's not good for your team, you've still wasted 2 weeks learning it to evaluate it. So we have to be very targeted. We have to introduce only the features that we think are worthwhile for everyone to learn about. I've whitewashed history a bit. The actual truth is nothing like this. Every single release has got a great big smorgasbord of other features. At this stage, it's too early to speculate on the other miscellaneous features that are going to be in the next release. But I'll touch upon what might be some of the ideas towards the end of the talk. async. How many of you have downloaded the async CTP? A show of hands. I see 7 hands. That's good. It means the next 15 minutes of my talk won't be wasted. And question, what is async? It's all to do with connected applications. Connected applications, meaning applications that talk to a high latency device. How many of you have written programs that connect to the internet? Yeah? Most of you. How many of you have written applications that connect to a database? Or connect to a file system? Or do some CPU-bound work? This is a joke. The fact is, all of us, every day of our lives, write programs that deal with high latency tasks, whether the high latency is from waiting for an internet response or database response or a server response or just waiting for some CPU-bound computation to happen. Every single application needs to do this. And in the past, this style of application has traditionally meant either a UI that freezes up or you have to delve into multi-threading, maybe background worker thread or something like that, and you have to start worrying about race conditions and events and semaphores and all of that. Or it's meant unmaintainable spaghetti code. Those of you who have been programming for Silverlight or for Windows Phone, and you've done web client dot download string completed, you've seen the start of that spaghetti code. Okay, what is async? Async is a new and much easier way to write connected applications. Every one of those kinds of connected applications. Async is a language feature. Async introduces 2 new keywords into C#, and the same 2 keywords into Visual Basic. Async is also a new API pattern. Vast chunks of the .NET framework are going to adopt this new, we call it task asynchronous pattern. All of this is scheduled for the next release of Visual Studio. However, what we heard from everyone was that this is a really pressing need that's facing most people nowadays. What we've done with async is something that we've never done before. Well, the first part we have done before. We released last September at PDC. We released a community technology preview so you could evaluate the technology. What we heard was a tremendous outcry of people who said, "This is so important for my day-to-day work. I need it right now." We said, "I'm sorry, we can't do that. It's just a technology preview. There are still bugs in it." People said, "I don't care." We said, "I'm sorry, we can't support it." They said, "I don't care. Give it to me now with a license that will let me use it right now." So this is brand new for Visual Studio. 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago now, we released the async CTP with a as-is license. That means you can use it, what, in your Silverlight applications, your ASP, your WPF, your WinForms, your Windows Phone applications, console applications. You can use it across the board. And this is really the future in your hands right now. So what you should do when you leave this conference, download the async CTP, play around with it, and see if it will help you in the same way that it's been helping everyone else. I have to stress that it's all at your own risk. If you go to the async CTP website, I'll tell you what that is later, there are a list of all the bugs we know about and some ideas about the bugs we don't know about. Probably about 50, 100 bugs, it's pretty hard to say. But we're trying to give you full information so you can evaluate it properly. I should say the license does not allow you to use it for weapons guidance systems, whatever. It does not allow you to use it for nuclear control systems. It does not allow you to use it for financial transactions. All of this, the lawyers made us say, even though it's at your own risk. I'm going to show the code. Like half of this talk will be about the code of using async. But first, do you all recognize this? We call it the spinning toilet bowl of death. It's what happens when you click something and the computer just waits for you, saying, I don't care about you, I'm doing my work. This is the code that causes the spinning toilet bowl of death, or code pretty much like this. What's this code doing? Webclient.uploadString. Okay, so it's initiating a web response. It's very cheap to initiate a web response. What? It's the URL won't be long, maybe 300 characters. The whole web request could easily fit in 1,024 bytes, one single internet packet. So very, very cheap to just send the request out there. But then we have to wait for the web service to come back, and it takes far longer than we want. This is an inescapable fact of life. Ultimately, if you look at the way TCP/IP is written, the time that this takes depends on the speed of light. And much as we'd love to, we can't do anything about speeding that up. Speed of light influences round trip time. The TCP algorithm uses the round trip time to judge how big a window it should use. The size of the window determines the bandwidth you get and the latency you get. So it really is down to the speed of light. Well, once all of that's happened, oh, of course, it also depends on how quick the server is on the other side. Once all of it's come back to us, we'll print done. It doesn't take any time at all to receive the internet response once the packet comes. It probably doesn't take much time for us to update our user interface so we can finally print the done message at the end. But only now, after everything is finished, are we able to respond to the rest of the UI? Are we able to respond to button clicks, mouse moves, repainting, dragging? And that's why the toilet bowl of death happens. So, should you be doing all of your uploading on a background thread? No. Look at this picture. Quote, a waiter's job is to wait on a table until the patrons have finished their meal. If you want to serve two tables concurrently, you must hire two waiters. It's not true, is it? It's obviously false. You don't need to hire two waiters. You just get the single waiter and get him to work on both tables. Why am I talking about waiters? It's because what I'm talking to is completely obvious when we're in a restaurant, but somehow when we start writing code, the same thing disappears out of our head and we forget what we're doing. For a waiter, think a thread of execution. You could all see that the previous slide was incorrect, but now let's see how it works for programming. I got this quote from the Android developer's blog. Can you spot the flaw in this one? Quotes, a good practice in creating a responsive application is to make sure your main UI thread does the minimum amount of work. Yeah, that's true. Makes sense. Number two, any potentially long task that may hang your application should be handled in a different thread. That's true. A long task, it will hang your application, it should go in a different thread. It sounds right so far. Typical examples of such tasks are network operations which involve unpredictable delays. That's true. Network operations involve unpredictable delays. Can any of you see what the flaw in this reasoning is? Put your hand up if you can spot it. I'll tell you what it is. When you're waiting for a network request, when you're waiting for a network response to come back, you're not doing any work. You're standing there twiddling your thumbs. You're not doing any work. You don't need to go off to a background thread to do it. It's just the same as the waiters. You can reuse the same thread for multiple tasks. And if you've been programming in Silverlight or JavaScript, you already know that. With the waiters, how best should we explain the sequence of events that go on in a restaurant? Should we explain them from the perspective of the waiter? He goes in, he thinks, oh, I'm going to take the order, I will make a mental note to come back to the table at the right time, then I'll interrupt myself to do another task, then another task, then I'll go back. No, that's a bad way. Or should we explain what happens in the restaurant from the point of view of the patrons? I go in, I sit down, I order my food, I eat my food, I pay the bill, I leave. That's a lot easier. Up until now, we have been programming Silverlight and Windows Phone especially from the perspective of this waiter. Do you know where I think that leads? Spaghetti. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to type out what I've been talking about. I think you all understand the concepts when you just think back to the waiters. What I'm going to type out is a short connected application that does exactly what I've said. First, I'm going to show you how people are programming it today. Then, I'm going to show you how we use the new async feature to make it drastically simpler. I'm going to start with it's going to be a Windows Phone application. How many of you have Windows Phones? I love mine. I got it 4 months ago. It's changed my life. I go to bed every night with my phone. No, it's not like that. I read Kindle on it, and because it's got the dark screen, it doesn't disturb my girlfriend with the bright light. And then I plug in headphones and I play some talk radio because that helps me fall asleep. I just love it. Anyway, enough about the phone. Let's talk about the code. By the way, I'm demoing this on the Windows Phone, but what I say applies to every single platform out there where you can write C# or Visual Basic for. It works for Silverlight, WPF, WinForms, Console App, ASP. Async will improve scalability of your ASP web servers. Well, it will improve the scalability in cases where you're making concurrent requests, at least. Let's get on to it. What I'm going to do, I've been working on this game in my free time. It's a simple paddle game like Breakout. It connects to an Azure database to keep the high scores because I wanted to have some kind of social aspect to it, to make some kind of community. Okay, what I'm going to write here is just the high score table bit of it. Let's drag in a table to store the high scores. And I'm going to drag in a progress bar. And I'll just set the progress bar properties is indeterminate, is true. That means that when my application starts, it's going to show the ... progress bar. The application will still be responsive. This isn't the toilet bowl of death, but at least it will show the user that a network request is in progress. Okay, let's get to coding it. When my application starts, I'm going to load the high scores. And also, when it's resurrected, the application module on the Windows Phone is if you switch to a different application, it actually terminates your application. And when the user goes back to your thing, it relaunches it. So I have to respond to that as well. Control dot, generate method from usage. Okay, I'm going to need to keep high scores from my Azure database. So I'm going to make a class here that represents the high scores. It just has the username, the score, and a picture of the user. And I've got this observable collection to keep track of all of the high scores. And we'll see how to bind that up in a moment. Okay, inside this function, I'm going to download the high scores. I make a new URI. This is the URI where my Azure database is going to keep the high scores. I'm going to create a new web client, and I'm going to download them. I'm calling the download string async. That's because this is how you have to do it on Silverlight or Windows Phone 7. On desktop, you can use download string if you're willing to use a background worker thread, but there's no point. A background worker thread is just a pain. So even on regular desktop, I would still do the asynchronous version of it. So download string async is just initializing. It's kicking off. It's sending the request. And I have to now write a handler for it. I will initiate the request here, and when it's completed, it's going to be handled in this code. What can I do in this code? Well, let's say I get the result. Very straightforward. I get the result back from the web server. It's in XML, so I parse it, and then I'm doing straightforward scraping of the XML using link. Extract out the user ID, the score, the picture, and I add it to this high scores variable, where it's the observable collection of all the high scores. That's good. And then all I have to do is go back to the page. When you navigate to this page, I can bind it. Get the current app where I've stored the high scores variable, and then data bind it to my UI control. And I'll run it just to show you that it really does work. There it is. It's downloading it. It's loading a picture for each of the users. And it's showing this updating progress bar to show that it's... Ah, I forgot. I have to turn off this progress bar once the download is completed. Question: what would be the best way for me to turn off that progress bar? It would be great if I could put something in here to respond to it. Bad luck. There isn't a nice way to do it. Probably the nicest way I have at my disposal would be to create another Boolean variable that implements iNotify property changed, and I data bind it to the isIntermediate property. That could switch it off. But straight away, you can see I'm entering into the realms of spaghetti. Let's see where else I get spaghetti. Obviously, this is a connected application. What is the definition of a connected application? It's one where my application fails because some API call failed, because some network or some cell phone tower or some server across the world that I've never heard of is congested or is failed or is busy or something like that. I have to handle failure at every single point of my connected application. Let's do that. Well, it might fail when I try to initiate the request. So I'll protect that with a catch block. And I have to handle this. Or it might fail when the web service comes back. It might fail with a 404 not found error from the web server or any of those. So I have to handle that. If e.error doesn't equal null, some kind of handling here. What do you see? I've had to handle the same error condition in two places. Spaghetti code. What happens if If it failed the first time due to a network timeout, I wanted to send the request a second time. Oh God, this seriously becomes impossible to write correctly in this style of code. I'll tell you a story about that. There's a function in the .NET framework called stream.copyTo. It copies from one stream to another. Fairly straightforward. When the .NET team, like 15 lines of code, when the .NET team in charge of this tried to write an async version, one that didn't block, one that would let a single waiter handle multiple tasks at the same time, when they tried to write an async version of copy2 using the spaghetti code style, they failed. It went mushroom from 15 lines of code up to 400 lines of code, and it did not pass code review because none of our code reviewers were willing to bet that it worked correctly. What's clear is that we need a completely new way of programming this. Let's start with a new way of programming it. Let's undo everything. And I'll undo this thing as well. Okay. Where am I? I'm sorry, I'm a bit lost. Okay, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to use async to do it better. Let's see. Instead of having an observable collection, control dot, using the namespace, instead of having an observable collection, I'm going to have a task. Oops, I've still got to define the class as well. The task type. The task type already existed in .NET 4 in Visual Studio 2010. Think of it as a future, a promise. The task type is a promise that I will give you this list of high scores even though I haven't quite got them yet. That's perfect for what we want. It's perfect for every single high latency operation. Okay, let's do it this way. High scores task equals load high scores async. And let's write this function. What I'm going to do here is make this an asynchronous method. I haven't yet told you what this keyword does, but you know that it's going to be something to do with a single waiter being able to be interrupted with a neat code flow, and we'll get onto that soon. The work that it's going to be doing is exactly the same as before. What will it do? What it's going to do is... Well, I'm creating the list of high scores. Next, set up the URI, and I'm going to make a web request. However, this time, I'm not using the download string async call that we saw before, where you had to sign up the spaghetti. In this one, I'm calling a new version of it called download string task async. Why did we call it task? It's because it returns a task of string. In other words, it returns a promise that it will give me a string back at some stage in the future. Let's be clear. When I call the function, it returns straight away with a promise. Later on, 2 seconds in the future, the promise will be fulfilled. And what will I do? I will await for the promise to be fulfilled. This is the new keyword we've introduced. It's saying, okay, I have a promise in my hand, and it's probably not done yet. So let's give control back to the user interface to let it be responsive, to let everything that we want to happen. to serve other tables. But later on, once the data has come back from the web service, I want you to jump straight back into this part in this method. This is what the new await keyword does. And the async method says, this is going to be one of those special methods that has await in it, and the caller might get back a task straight away, even though we will jump back into this method at some later state in time. Okay, at some later stage in time, once we've got the data, we're going to parse it just like we did before, and we're going to do the normal link processing, exactly the same as before. It's going to walk over the XML data. It's going to add it to the high scores list. And then at the end, return high scores. This might look a bit weird. You think, wait a minute. What's the type of this variable? It's a list of high scores. What is the return type of this function? It's a task of list of high scores. These are different types. This is part of what's going on with the async keyword. It returned the promise immediately, but when we get to the return statement in an async method, that's when we fulfill our promise. Well, what can we do with that? Up here, oops, I've got to do this bit. I'm going to make onNavigated to an async method. What it's going to do is it's going to wait for the task to be finished. This is beautiful, because what I'm getting in the same single variable is the contents of the list, what was data-bound before, and also I'm getting a logical control structure that lets me act when the data is ready. Once the data is ready, now at last I can turn off that stupid progress bar. Okay, I've worked. I've done it. I've written this code using async. I'm just going to show you that it works. Yep, it worked, and it turned off the progress bar straight away as soon as it was done. That on its own is not quite compelling. What I'm going to do now is show you where async makes the rest of your job easier, because this is just a toy application. But let's get serious. Let's suppose... let's suppose I wanted to do exception handling. Remember before, I had to handle exceptions in two separate places? Well, with this, I don't. I can have just a single exception handler. And this exception will handle everything. It will handle problems that arise from initiating the web request. It will handle problems that arise from the server. It will handle problems even in the link parsing. What we've seen is that async means that existing control structures like try-catch blocks work properly. That's good. I'm going to get a bit fancier. I'm going to show you what else we can do. What I said is that sometimes... actually, I'll tell you the real statistics. On the internet, when you make a request over a broadband connection, like wireless or Ethernet, there is a 4% chance of congestion on the internet, which will cause to your packet being lost. What will happen is that your computer, in 4% of the time, will just wait there for a timeout after it hasn't got the speed of light going to the web server and coming back for its window period. If it hasn't got a response in that time, it will say, hey, something's wrong, I'm going to send a second response. So, 4% of the time, your requests are taking much longer than they need to be. You all know this. When you're using Internet Explorer, you just hit the refresh button when something's gone wrong. I mean, we'd quite like to do something like that in our code. So let's do that. Let's say task of string is this, and I am going to kick off pessimistically a second request to the same web browser. What next? I will say task of string winner equals await task x dot win any of task 1, task 2. What have I said here? I've said I'm going to kick off two requests in parallel, and I'm going to wait for whichever one finishes first. There's a famous guy, Professor Sir Tony Hoare. He was the guy who invented quicksort. He's one of the grandfathers of computer science. He talks about this as gambling on horses. He says, we're betting on two horses at the same time. We'll win on whichever one happens. And let's just await the winner. Look at that. Isn't that a beautiful way of doing this? We can make this even better. Because I've sent off two requests, I get one of them back promptly. Maybe the second one was delayed. It came back afterwards for whatever reason. And if the second request comes back to me, it's going to actually cost antenna battery life on my cell phone. It's going to cost power to receive this second pointless request. So let's turn it off straight away. Let's cancel it. How are we going to cancel this second response, this second request? Var CTS equals new cancellation token source control dot cancellation token source. It already exists in .NET 4, but we're using it in new and exciting ways here. I'm going to pass this cancellation token to both of the calls. As soon as I have a winner, I can cancel. Brilliant. I've now optimized responsiveness in my application, and I've optimized power consumption in my application. And you see that we're using await in two places here, and we're using cancellation in interesting ways, and all of it is still kept inside this outer try-catch block. What I want to do here is to give you a feeling that with the new keyword, with the await keyword, and with these new API framework functions that return a task and take a cancellation token source, we have made a dramatically easier way of programming connected applications. It's kind of exciting. I mean, you can tell why people were saying, we want to get our hands on this straight away in our production code. Okay, there are still a few bugs in the async CTP. And really, if you use this in your production code, you should really be running PE verify on your executables to check that the compiler code gen bugs have not manifested in your code. But you'll probably be saving far more bugs that would have arisen in your own code if you're using this spaghetti style of programming. And really, what have we talked about? We've talked about designs of application to handle high latency. High latency from CPU-bound work, from network-bound work, from I/O-bound work. And we've said that the task type unifies them all together. Task. It's a promise for a result that will be delivered in the future. It is a perfect way to represent CPU work that you kick off on a background thread, or network requests that you don't even need to kick off on a background thread, or an I/O request. Oh, And the good thing is that when you're kicking them off on a network or I/O thread, you don't need to worry about... Have any of you had this in your WPF applications where you got back a request and you tried to update the UI, but it threw you an exception? It said, error, cannot update user interface from background thread. Okay, with this, all of that's gone away. That's a thing of the past. Because with network and I/O requests, you don't need to go back to the... You're always on the UI thread, and you can always update your UI. So it makes that simpler. And let's just show something. Where was I? In that slide, I talked about CPU, network, and I/O bound. Let's just stick in a CPU bound request. Let's suppose that the data we get back might be really long, and we want to do the XML parsing on a background thread. Let's do that. Await task x.run of Why haven't I written this correctly? Because I wanted an expression lambda. Okay, what I've done here, task x.run has kicked off the CPU bound work on a background thread, but as soon as the background thread is finished, the magic of the await keyword is that I've gone back to my UI thread straight away, so I can update the UI straight away. Okay, this is beautiful. That's what I meant when I said we can integrate the CPU stuff. So what we've done is we've added a fourth category of high latency operation, this composite category. The ones, the methods in C-sharp or VB with the async modifier, these are the ones that are built up from the other task returning APIs that we're calling. Let's give a crazy example. Here, what am I doing? I made a network-bound request to scrape data off YouTube. I kicked off two downloads in parallel. I waited for both of them. Let's suppose in this case I needed both requests. Then I did some CPU bound work to mash up the two videos that I downloaded from YouTube. And then I saved it onto my hard disk. This would be I/O bound, of course, because the disk takes a long time. And I used await for all of them. And what I think what we have to say about this is that we're talking about compositionality. This is the word that we use as language designers. Compositionality means that you can take an asynchronous operation and build up something bigger out of it easily. What we've seen is that if we have task returning library functions, it was easy for us to build our own task returning methods out of them. And what we've seen is that if we use the await keyword to invoke an asynchronous operation, then we can build it up using the normal language constructs, for loops, while loops, try-catch blocks. All of these can now be used in the asynchronous style of programming thanks to the await keyword. Of course, I've given all this in C#. I have to say, in the spirit of co-evolution, we've done all of this work in both languages simultaneously. And actually, in the next release of Visual Studio, VB is catching up a little further. It's catching up with iterators, which C# already had, and with XNA and Phone. Why iterators? How many of you use iterators? Okay, a good number. Iterators ended up being almost identical to async methods. I don't want to go into that. Anyway, we share exactly the same implementation for both of them in VB. I was talking about the future. And when I said the future, I of course really meant the present, since it's out there in this as-is CTP form. And you can start using it straight away in your production apps. And I really strongly encourage you to try it out. How about the far future? What's happening next? Compiler as a service. Some of you might have seen Anders talk about this or give a demonstration at PDC. So this will be a refresh for you if you've seen it before. Compiler as a service. What does it mean in practice? Here's some VB code. I saw that most of you can read VB. This is one practical thing that we expect to fall out of compiler as a service. We expect that we will be able to add an eval function. We can take a string of C# source code or VB source code and evaluate it at runtime. Of course, this is useful if you want to store some kind of logic in the database, some formula in the database that your customers can update and your code will work with them however they change it. You're thinking, wow, eval, that's exciting. I saw that, what, in Visual Basic for Applications 15 years ago. I saw that in FoxPro 15 years ago. Yes, it's true. The far future is the far past. That's where we're going. It was useful. And the problem is that once we get to a compiled language brings so many other advantages, but we lose the eval function. And it's time to bring them back. Why are we bringing it back? What does compiler as a service actually mean under the hood? Well, a compiler, we always think of it as a black box. You give it source code in, it does its magic, and it gives you the .NET assemblies out the other side. Compiler as a service means the compiler has an enormous amount of knowledge about the structure of your code. Of course it's got knowledge about what your code is. It knows completely about the parse tree, the bound tree. It knows what all the symbols means. It has to know this to compile it, for goodness sake. What we're talking about is breaking open that box to give you, the plugin developer, access to all of this internal knowledge about it. Let's give an example of this. Let's write something very similar, simple in C#, int factorial of int I. The simplest application that every single person has abused in every single application they've ever written. I've written it in C#. I'm going to load up a Visual Basic application, edit, paste as Visual Basic. How did we do that? This is using the prototype code that we've been working on. I'm not going to show you the source code of Paste as Visual Basic because it's completely in flux. Our APIs are changing every week. Actually, I asked if I could show you the source code, but the guys in charge of the API said, sorry, no, we're changing it. We don't want to give them the wrong impression. But what we've done is that we used the internal knowledge of what we've got to walk the parse tree, to translate it into Visual Basic. If you've already got the parse tree and you already know what the symbols work, it's not that difficult to translate it into Visual Basic. I should say, I mean, it wasn't a five-liner. It took the guy who did this, Cyrus, it took him about 500 lines of code to implement. But even so, 500 lines of code to translate from C# to Visual Basic, I think it's pretty impressive. So what compiler as a service means is that all of this knowledge will be tied up into your hands. It means that you guys will be able to write refactorings like this, stick into the compilation pipeline if you want to do some kind of compilation magic, maybe introduce bits of your business logic. I think there are a whole bunch of interesting things that are going to come out, and we're just scratching the surface. As I say, this is all far distant future of VB and C Sharp. It won't happen in the next release, sometime after that. But that's where we're going. Other possible futures? Well, I notify property changed and dependency properties. What we've heard is that everyone hates the boilerplate code that you have to write out with these. Sorry, we haven't figured this one out yet. We've had lots of ideas, and we know that you all hate it, and we hate it too, all of the time. We've been working. Every month, we have a design meeting dedicated to, hey, wait, what if this, we could do, handle them in this way, or handle them in that way? We have not figured out a good solution. The ideas we've been playing with, maybe each property field could have an object which implements the getter or the setter accessors, so you could share them. No, that wasn't good. That would incur one word of overhead for every property in your object, which is pretty bad because in WPF you have loads of properties that you never even change from default. What if we implemented macro support for C Sharp? Oh, we don't want macro support for C Sharp. We've seen what it's done for C++. It's given tremendous power for people to write languages that aren't C++ anymore. We don't want to go down that road. We want to have a more readable language that most people can read. What about some form of metaprogramming? Well, we have 5 different proposals for metaprogramming on the cutting room floor. None of them have got anywhere yet. Further future. How many of you have done file new F-sharp project in Visual Studio 2010? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out of an audience of 120. That's not good enough, frankly. When you go home tomorrow, I want you to launch Visual Studio, do file new F-sharp project. It starts with a tutorial project. It recognizes that it will be new to most of you. And it will just show you the basic language constructs in F-sharp. Why am I telling you to look at F-sharp? F-sharp is a language of the future. F-sharp had asynchronous workflows before C-sharp and VB. If you do file new F-sharp project in Visual Studio 2010, it already has async in a very beautiful way. And that is production quality code. That is supported by Microsoft. It is free from bugs. By the way, I was the guy who implemented the async CTP, so I can insult the guy who implemented the async CTP for all of the bugs he put in. Check out F-sharp type providers. If any of you have seen the demo of this, it's magic. The guy's typing away at F-sharp. He says, oh, I want to access some kind of internet database, one of these next generation internet things with an ontology of all different things. And then he types it in, and his IntelliSense has IntelliSense from a schema that it downloaded off the internet. In effect, what you've all done is you've come up with some kind of internet thing, and it's got its schema, and you have, maybe with an ORM or something, you've had to create classes in an ORM or something that reflect that internet schema. With F-sharp type providers, no more. Really, it's a beautiful, beautiful demo. F-sharp immutable programming. What the idea there is that when you do have to start using background threads, mutable variables are probably, and race conditions, are probably your biggest source of bugs. So, Let's try having a language where data is by default immutable, where you fall into the pit of success, where it's easiest for you to write code that does not alter its variables once they've been constructed. If you don't alter them once they've been constructed, then you won't run into race conditions, them being modified after they've been constructed. It sounds obvious, and F-sharp has really succeeded in this in a beautiful way. Why am I telling you all this? Because F-sharp is a language of the future. I'm not saying that these things are going to go into C-sharp and VB, apart from async, of course, that's going to go in. The other things, who knows? I've got no idea. They might not. But if you guys go back and you look at F-sharp now, give it 2 days, write a small application, write a game in F-sharp, I don't know. You'll find yourself a couple of years ahead of your peers, I think, and your competitors. And I think it's really worth doing for that reason. That's the end of my talk. I'd love questions and answers. And I should say, download the asynchronous CTP. This is the URL. If you go to the URL, you'll find links to blogs that discuss all of the bugs that are in it. By the way, I'll be down in the experts booth for any questions you have for the rest of this conference, apart from the talks. I'll be there during the breaks and the lunch breaks and so on. Thank you very much.